The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Texas show.
People tell me that since I'm the announcer, it's not about me, Todd Wilkerson. They say that my job is to serve the host of the show, Eric Metaxas.
What nonsense. I've known Eric for years, and you can take it from me. You just can't depend on him.
Mark my words, one day you'll blink and he'll be gone.
Off to fleece the next group of suckers.
But I'll always be here, no matter what, right here for you. Put your feet up and tell me all about it. Oh, yeah. And now your host.
If he's even still showing up.
Eric Metaxas.
Oh my gosh. Thanks, Todd, for bringing a little sunshine to my bleak day. No, we've got a special hour here for you. I love history, as you know. I have written books of history. I have to say that there are certain things that you learn from history that you can't really learn otherwise. It seems to me that the book that I'm going to be talking about this hour is one of those. It's one of those books. It tells you about something that you probably won't bump into in your ordinary life. In this case, specifically, we're talking about World War II, but it's more than that. The book that I'm holding here is called "Battle Hardened: An Infantry Officer's Harrowing Journey from D-Day to VE Day," published by Regnery. I have the author on the line with me, Craig Chapman. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Eric. Appreciate being on air with you.
Well, this is, I always talk about how I love history, and I think that, you know, you hear a lot of pious blather about the greatest generation, but there are times when there is no doubt that the men who fought that war, World War II, can teach us something, and that's one of the reasons I wanted to talk to you, and one of the reasons I wanted book. To my audience to hear about this book. So first of all, tell us the story. I didn't even mention that it's about your dad. Tell us the right background story.
Well, this book traces my father's World War II experiences, like I said, from D-Day to the end of the campaign in Europe, VE Day. It was based largely on his oral history, his letters, and also a lot of archival research. And I'm sure as an historian yourself, you would appreciate that. We went into the National Archives and dug up all the unit journals, after-action reports, operations, overlays, and some, you know, depositions to find out just exactly where his unit went. From Utah Beach all the way to the German Alps. And we succeeded in getting a day-to-day accounting of his activity.
I mean, that's a big deal itself. Now, your father, did you say that he passed away in 2002, or do I just know that?
Yes, he passed away in 2002. So it was an effort on my part and my brothers and actually the whole family to collect all the anecdotes and little stories that we'd heard over the years, and we gathered about 100-plus different little anecdotes that we could recall.
And, I mean, but this man, your father, lived the high points of this war. I mean, you're talking about from D-Day to VE Day. This is pretty extraordinary.
That's sort of what is a little bit special about my father is, you know, not that he did anything super heroic or he was commanded thousands of people, but he spent the campaign in an infantry company for an amazing amount of time through some of the worst combat of that campaign against Germany. Of course, he was out for a few months after being wounded on two occasions. Nevertheless, we counted up just an ungodly amount of time that he spent under enemy fire. So the fact that he survived at all was, you know, pretty amazing. And
now he did talk about these experiences. Give us some of the highlights so that people can understand what it is that got you to write this book, because there's some amazing stuff in here. This is not just, you know, another person who went to war.
Well, he landed on Utah Beach on D-Day. He was part of the 4th Infantry Division, 12th Infantry Regiment, in the 2nd Battalion.
Now, I'm sure there are young people listening who don't have a clue what we're talking about. So
right.
D-Day, ladies and gentlemen, if you're listening, in case you don't know, this is one of the most extraordinary moments in the history of mankind. This right. is a moment when the West, the good guys, that's us, went into the teeth of German Nazi machine gun fire.
Mm-hmm.
Many, many, many thousands were killed, young men. This is one of the most heroic moments in the history of the United States of America.
Right. And, well, unfortunately, most people, when we think about D-Day, remember Omaha Beach. My father landed on Utah Beach, which, you know, turned out to be a much more successful operation. However, in the days that followed, his unit went through some terrific combat. And just to kind of give people an appreciation for the intensity of the warfare, his regiment had about 3,000 men in it when it landed on D-Day.
And they landed in amphibious craft on the beaches.
Right. And a week later, they had suffered 950-some casualties.
I mean, just, again, this is not, we're not talking about something that happened in olden times. I mean, this is not that long ago. This is your dad, a young man. How old was he when this happened?
He was 24 when he landed on D-Day. And he ended the war at age, you know, a year later, age 25, as a rifle company commander. So he started off with a mortar platoon. He went to command a machine gun platoon and eventually to command a rifle company. And at the end, he was controlling not just infantrymen, but also tanks and tank destroyers in the drive across southern Germany. So when you look at the war, it's an extended contact and combat, many different types of operations going on. And it's different than what most people would generally get from a cursory examination of the campaign. If you looked at your history textbooks, you might pick up about, you know, the landing on D-Day. You hear about Patton's breakout and roar across France. You hear about the Battle of the Bulge and the Siege of Bastogne. And, you know, most people don't know a whole lot more besides that, but that there was a tremendous amount of conflict going across all of Western Europe and, of course, on the Eastern Front as well. The whole continent was in flames, practically.
Well, it's amazing to think, too, that, you know, we see movies about World War II, but your father was literally dodging Nazi capture. I mean, he lived this.
He was in an infantry company, going toe to toe against the Nazis, and you know, they spent an unusual amount of time in direct contact with SS Panzer divisions, as luck would have it. And his division, the 4th Infantry Division, suffered the most casualties from D-Day to VE-Day of any division in the American Army. So, but just give you an idea of the scale of combat that that he went through.
Did he talk about this a lot? Because a lot of people of that generation are famously tight-lipped. They, for some reason, didn't talk about it. It sounds like he did a
little
bit. Well,
he did. He was, my father was very open, very matter-of-fact, but he never pulled us together and say, let me tell you about the war. These were all little stories or tidbits we picked up out of just pure casual conversation.
Right.
And if we were watching a war movie on TV and he said, oh, yeah, that happened in my unit one time. And I go, that would be how it would come up. or, you know, some other conversation, we'll talk about fear, and he said, "Oh yeah, I've tell you one time that this happened to me."
Well, we're gonna come back to talk more, folks. I'm talking right now to the author of a brand new book from Regnery. It's called "Battle Hardened: An Infantry Officer's Harrowing Journey from D-Day to VE Day." It's an incredible story. We'll be right back. He's a love machine, and he won't work for anybody but me. Isn't that comforting that he's not moonlighting, he's not going out and working for other people as a love machine? I just appreciate that. That's just great. Folks, we're talking to the author of a new book called Battle Hardened about World War II. It is called Battle Hardened, An Infantry Officer's Harrowing Journey from D-Day to VE Day. Craig Chapman is on the line. Craig, you write the book telling a story about your dad, Bill Chapman. He's passed away now, but you said that he shared this kind of stuff over the years, anecdotally, just a little here, a little there. What was it that compelled you and your brother to dive into this and to create this narrative?
Well, as you know, the World War II generation is rapidly passing away, and it won't be too long before they'll all be gone. And that changes the nature of what we call history. Right after World War II, there were millions of veterans, and as the citizens of the country's familiarity with World War II and what happened was an oral history. They spoke to their sons, their brothers, and eventually to their fathers. And that is how most people got exposed to World War II. You could hear it firsthand. Well, soon, all that oral history will have passed, and unless that oral history gets converted to written history,
right,
it will be forgotten. So this was our effort to preserve a lot of what we had heard of my father's personal war experiences into the written record. I do want to emphasize that this book is not just what my dad did in the war. We went to quite a length to catalog what happened to his unit. So the end result, this book is as much a small unit military history as it is any type of personal memoir of the war.
Right.
And in that respect, it speaks to the experience of the infantry soldiers in the Western European campaign.
And let me ask you, when you decided to pull this together, how long did it take you to pull all this stuff together? I mean, it sounds like there's just a lot of little bits and pieces that to create this narrative.
Well, it took a year. Excuse me. It took a year to collect the oral history, get letters from my mother, and then just cataloging that and trying to piece it together. Then, say, another year of doing the archival research, which was, here's the basis of what was going on, the context with which these stories occurred. And the trickiest part was, how do we place this one little vignette into what was the narrative of the campaign.
Right, the context to give people the
right,
bigger
picture.
Right, and
that required some careful thought and research. And, you know, in some cases it was just impossible. You know, he would speak about something that happened to him, and there's just no way that we could tell when and where that occurred.
Right. Now, let me ask you, I mean, in describing the book, people are using the words harrowing, riveting, gripping. You know, this is, it's war. I mean, so take us inside it. What are some of the stories that you heard that made you think this has to be told?
Oh, well, there were like I said, about 100 different stories that we could recall, but I'll share one with you. At the very end of the war, my father had his company was sent on a mission to guard one of the satellite camps of the Dachau system. It was a slave labor camp, and the internees were, dying off in great numbers. And he had just been liberated, and the army really didn't know what to do with this camp of starving, internees. And they were afraid there was going to be a food riot. So my father's company shows up to guard this place to control the internees. And he walked up, took one look, and he just realized this was a senseless mission. He got back on the phone, called up higher headquarters, and said, this is pointless. These internees, no matter how outraged they could be, they don't have the physical strength to do anything other than stand up, hopefully. And they got relieved, and he went back into the line to continue the last few days of the operation. But he related one little semi-humorous incident that occurred to him at this camp.
It's hard to believe anything could be funny at a death camp, but I know that when you're in these situations, you can't even. It's hard to believe. Again, it's for us for those of us who weren't there. It's sort of mythic. The idea that this actually happened, that your father was there, he saw this with his own eyes. What the Nazis had done to these men and women. It's horrific.
Right, and what was curious about this, and I talked with my brothers and my mother about it, and none of us can ever recall my father speaking in terms that, showed any type of a visceral reaction to what he had seen. To him, it was just, this is what happened. And I think that's kind of a clue to what was going on in my father's head throughout the whole campaign, is that somehow he isolated his emotions, he walled that part of his feelings off, and he just focused on getting his job done and fighting the war. And I've come to believe that that was his coping mechanism. And it shows in this kind of strange reaction to, he sees this, what amounts to a camp where thousands of people are just withering away and dying through harsh treatment. And he doesn't have an emotional reaction to that. And he went through brutal campaigns, and I think that was just, he was so inured to the brutality of the war.
I mean, I was going to say, at this point, it's extraordinary, because I think we forget that people who live through this, it affects you forever, and you don't know how it affects you. It just affects you, and that when you're 50 and 60 and 70, you're still living with that. It has shaped you in a certain way. That whole generation was shaped through this stuff. This is tough stuff. I mean, to go through the Depression and then to go through this stuff, who knows? I think it led to some extent, you can see how it led to these people not sort of allowing their kids to enter this through the 50s and 60s, the drug culture and everything. You kind of wonder, where did the boomers come from? Well, they were raised by the greatest
generation.
Well, that's right. And how did that happen? But anyway, now, did your father ever fear for his life? I assume he always did.
Well, absolutely. But I think it was one of those things that similarly he pushed that into the background. He made a quote one time that when he landed on the beach on D-Day, an artillery shell came in and hit the beach and sprayed shrapnel out, and you could see the shrapnel splattering in the water in a nice circular, semicircular pattern. And he said, a thought occurred to me right then, a guy can get hurt out here. And it just ran through his head, and he realized, this is dangerous stuff. And at that moment in time, he immediately switched on in his brain, well, I can't worry about that.
Where did your father grow up?
He grew up in Oakland, California. He was son of an Oakland fire department worker, and his stay-at-home mother. And he went to the University of California as an engineer. He ended up getting an engineering degree at the same time he completed ROTC. And immediately after that, he went straight off to Fort Benning to join the infantry as an infantry officer.
Well, the question people always get, authors always get this question, is, so why should somebody read this book? There's so many books written on World War II. What is it about this book that's compelling?
Well, this book focuses at the ground level. As I said earlier, it speaks to the experience of the infantrymen in this war, where the great bulk of the losses, the deaths, and the casualties occurred. And this is how the campaign was won, by these troops engaging a very skilled and determined enemy, and what they did and how they fought to overcome this enemy and eventually turn the tables. And by the end of the war, it's the American army beating up on a very disorganized and demoralized German army. So there was a process that took place from the beginning to the end.
Right. I was going to say the German army, by the time this is over, was totally demoralized and in chaos. They know they're losing. We're going to be right back, folks. We're talking about World War II. The book is Battle Hardened. We'll be right back. You don't want to catch the boogie fever. It's tough stuff. Folks, we're talking about World War II. We're talking about the book Battle Hardened, retired infantry officer and author Craig Chapman is talking about his father's firsthand account of the horrors and the fears and dangers of the front lines of some of the most momentous events in World War II. Craig Chapman, again, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Eric.
Now, tell us, because you are a retired infantry officer, you have a different view of this than, say, I would. I mean, you understand this kind of thing a little bit better than your average listener.
Well, I've had all that training. I understood the military terminology. I understood the principles of war and how to fight with an infantry force. So I had an advantage over the average reader in going through the archival material and trying to look at what was taking place. And I guess the first thing that struck me was how much I didn't know. I learned a lot. I had to appreciate this was an army that was fighting a generation before I served in the army, and the army had learned a few things since then. So I had to teach myself, well, how did an army in 1944 and 45 fight? Had to pull out the old manuals and say, "Oh, that's how they did things back then." Without boring your listeners about the technical nature of this, my father was leading a machine gun platoon. Well, when you're attacking, you have to ground those machine guns. They're on tripods. So, what do you do when your own riflemen are in front of you? You certainly don't want to mow them down. So what I learned was back then they used the machine gun in an indirect capacity. They would fire up over the heads of their own troops and have the bullets land on the enemy position in the distance, which required fairly complicated fire control mechanisms, which is why my father, with an engineering degree, I assume was employed in that capacity, because it took a lot of math to calculate how to get those rounds to land where you want them to.
A lot of math. They're doing math out there on the field?
Oh, yes.
In the field?
in the field, they had to actually use formulas to get rounds, either mortar rounds, artillery rounds, or in a lot of cases, machine gun rounds.
Well, mortar rounds I could understand, but when you're talking about machine gun rounds, you don't picture it. You know, it's not like you're launching.
Until I read it, and was the other thing I was discovering was that they really hadn't developed some of the tools and techniques that I was familiar with. The Army went into the campaign in 1944, I think, with some baggage left over from World War I about how the war would be fought, where the riflemen jump up out of the trench and cross open fields against an enemy. Well, that was not the case in Normandy in 1944, where you had to fight from hedgerow to hedgerow across, and there would be an open space in between. And you don't have observation of a target. Somebody has to observe it and call back, and then you have to coordinate the fire control to be able to hit that target. So how this was being done back then, and it was very surprising how difficult it was for them to operate.
Was your father was living cheek by jowl with death? Was he a person of faith when he went through this experience?
No, actually not. My father was not a man of what we call faith. He was raised by, I guess, pardon me, go back to, he had an Irish Catholic mother and a Protestant father. So I guess somehow religion probably didn't enter into that family dynamic too well back when he was growing up.
Well, a lot of people view, their religious background. It's almost like I'm Irish, so I'm Catholic, and my mother's German, so she's Lutheran. And you realize that for a lot of those people, they didn't have a serious faith, but they kind of thought, well, I'm not a Muslim, I'm not a Jew. I guess that means I'm a Christian. But they didn't own their faith. So you're saying really that as he walked through this carnage, he was not looking to God in the midst of it.
No, that was not not my father's nature. My father was a very objective person. As an engineer,
You can still be objective. You can still be objective and have faith. But you're just saying
absolutely.
That it wasn't his. But I mean, he saw death. I mean, did he describe that to you, or did he shrink from that?
Well, you have to remember these were tidbits that came out of casual conversation. My father didn't want to dwell on the gory aspects of what he had gone through. There were a few things that would come out, but I think he kept a lot of that to himself. He saw a tremendous amount, but that was the sort of thing that he wasn't as comfortable as sharing with us. And like I said, my take on him is that he had in his mind concentrated solely on what he wanted to accomplish, how to win the war, how to fight, accomplish his mission, and try to keep all these other issues in the back of his mind about his own safety.
Craig, I'm sorry, I have to interrupt you. We're going to another break here. We're going to be right back, folks, talking to Craig Chapman. The book is Battle Hardened. We'll be right back. Eric Metaxas show. I'm going to fly away. We're talking to the author of a new book out by Regnery. It's called Battle Hardened, an infantry officer's harrowing journey from D-Day to VE Day. Craig Chapman, you're the son, of course, of Bill Chapman, who lived the story. You wrote the story. Did your father have a sense before he passed away in 2002 that you might be doing something like this?
Well, just to relate this to you, we wanted him to write this story. Myself, my brothers, my mother, all of us encouraged my father to write what he had related to us orally. But he refused. He did not do it. And in fact, one time, my brother and I twisted his arm so hard that I think he finally broke down and said, okay, all right, I'll try and do something.
And what was it? I mean, what was it that he said that made you feel this way?
Well, when we said, Dad, you've got to do this, he just hunched over and grunted.
No, but what I'm saying is when you say you've got to do this, what was it about his experience that made you feel like some people have to hear this?
Well, just the amazing things that he had gone through, what he had seen firsthand. You know, I knew a lot of what he had gone through. I'd heard these stories, and I had previously written a military history, and I knew how important these firsthand accounts are to add perspective to the general military history. And there's nothing that helps a reader more to relate to what is happening than to hear somebody say, yeah, this is what what happened to me in the middle of this campaign or this battle.
Did he talk about killing, that he had killed men in the course of this? I mean, one assumes he did, but did he talk about that?
He never went there. He never wanted to talk about that.
Did he talk about what the German army was like at the end of the whole war I almost think that you would feel sorry for them at that point.
Well, his reaction was fairly interesting. He thought a lot of the German people. He ended up having quite a bit of respect for the Germans and their army. He hated the SS.
Well, the SS were practically motivated by the devil when you think about how horrible.
Yeah, and clearly at the end of the war, it was ridiculous. They were preying on their own population and committing war crimes against their own people.
I didn't know that. Tell us about that.
Well, at the end of the war, when they were rolling across, when they were attacking their way across southern Germany, they would go to one town after another, and if there was any resistance, they would just have to blow the place apart. And the SS at that point in time were playing this game where a handful of SS would set up in a little town and fire on the American troops. The American troops would be in the habit of blowing the place apart with artillery or tank fire and then moving in. Of course, by that time, the SS had left and the town was destroyed. This was going on repeatedly across southern Germany, and my dad related an incident. I don't know if you've ever been to southern Germany as a tourist, you might be familiar with the town Rothenburg ob der Tauber.
No, but go ahead.
It's a relict of the Middle Ages.
Yeah,
it's just an absolutely charming city that somehow history passed by for hundreds of years, and today it's a major tourist attraction. Well, during World War II, my father's regiment captured Rothenburg. It was done by another battalion. And in this case, the American Army and the German Wehrmacht officer made a unspoken agreement for the Germans to vacate the town intact and the Americans just to move in and occupy it. Well, the same day that occurred, my father was a few kilometers away and approaching this small German town, and the mayor was out front of the town and greeted them and just told them, well, the city's open, or town's open, you can just move right in. And my father looked at him and said, that's good. But if anybody shoots at my troops, I'll shell the town. And you could just see the visible change in the mayor. Obviously, this was some SS troops had convinced him to try and bluff the Americans. And then all of a sudden, he was just shaking like a leaf. And sure enough, the minute the scouts moved forward, they got shot at. And my father just called up the artillery, and they blew the town apart.
This ancient town.
So it's just kind of a sad tale. This Rothenburg got spared, but here's this tiny little town just got destroyed just because of, you know, desire to leave nothing for the Allies.
Well, look, we have to be clear here. You know, speaking myself as a Christian, I understand that the SS had an absolutely satanic view of things. They did not care about what average people care about, the humanity of the women and children. They did not care. They didn't believe in good or evil. They had a Nietzschean view of the world. And if you don't believe in good or evil, you simply believe in power, this is how you behave. And the story of the Nazis is a story of this. Your average German soldier, my grandfather was one of them, was not like this. But the SS, the elites, and the Nazis, the committed Nazis, did not believe in what most every American believes, in the basic ideas of decency.
Let me tell you a little story my father told that gives you kind of an idea of the mindset.
We're gonna have to hold that story for the other side of the break. Get ready to go. But right now, we're going to go to a break. We'll be right back, folks. It's the Eric Metaxas Show.
Savior, are you persuaded to go home? That you're ready for the Lord to come and take you
home. Folks, it's the Eric Metaxas Show. We're talking to the author of Battle Hardened, about World War II, an infantry officer's harrowing journey from D-Day to VE-Day. You were going to tell us just now, Craig, you had an anecdote. We've just got a few minutes left, so go ahead.
Sure. This occurred in the pursuit across Belgium. This is after the fall of Paris, and the German army was retreating back into Germany. My father was part of an operation that took this Belgian city, and as they were occupying it, some old woman invited him to spend the evening in her home. And it just so happened that she shared the home with her daughter and a small child, a small granddaughter. The younger woman had been kept as a concubine by the local SS commandant. And, of course, once the Americans showed up, he was heading back to Germany. But as he was packing up and leaving, he pulled this woman aside and told her, if I find out that you've spoken to the Americans, when I come back, and I'll be back in 3 months, if you've talked to the Americans, I will shoot your daughter. And then he left. It was just his attempt to terrorize this poor woman one more time before he fled.
Well, as I say, I mean, anybody who's familiar with my Bonhoeffer book, I lay this out. It is nothing less than satanic. In other words, your average German did not buy into Nazi thinking in the way that we might think that they did. There were many just Germans who... they were dragooned into fighting. They had no choice. My grandfather was one of them. He was killed in the war. But those who were committed, those in the SS, these elites, they bought into an ideology, a philosophy that is diabolical. They didn't care about the kinds of things that you would assume people would care about. You know, the dignity of women and children, that kind of thing. They didn't care. This is a perfect illustration of it. It's horrifying, and I say this only because we live in a culture where you have to make the case that there is real evil out there. There are people who don't think the way we do. They have bought into an ideology which is horrific, and the Nazis really did. I mean, the Nazis, again, not just the Germans, but the Nazis, those who bought into this, they kind of it's the Nietzschean will to power. They had the power and they would create the rules.
Well, I guess if you feel like you're completely superior to other people, then it doesn't create any moral hazard for you to mistreat, abuse, or even kill them.
That's exactly right, and that's why, again, I'm speaking as a Christian. You know, I believe in the sanctity of all lives. That I don't have a choice about that. But if you don't believe that, then who's to say whether some people are subhuman or less valuable? You have a utilitarian ethic. It's just incredible when we think about the soldiers who fought this war, for soldiers like your dad, this is what they were up against. And if they had not prevailed, we could be under this kind of ideology. Craig Chapman, just want to thank you for taking the time and for writing this book. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Eric. I much appreciate spending time with your listeners.
Wonderful. Folks, the book is Battle Hardened. This is the Eric Metaxas Show. Please go to our website, MetaxasTalk.com. Thanks for listening.
Star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.